Osiris.
Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of 8 cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
Hello, audience. My name is Devin Gilfillian. I'm in Nashville, Tennessee, originally from outside of Philadelphia. I try to make music that makes people want to understand each other and love each other, and then also shake their ass and forget about the bullshit going on in their life. You know what I mean? No games, I can move real slow. Oh, 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 oh. I'm a hodgepodge, melting pot of soul and rock and roll and R&B and psychedelic soul and funk and all these different old and new, you know, Jimi Hendrix and Marvin Gaye and Kent, you know, I try influenced by it, but I listen to Kendrick Lamar and grew up listening to Kanye before Kanye lost his mind, and
yeah,
and Pharrell and Timbaland and everything they were doing. And so, like, I'm a weird melting pot, Z. I really am.
Time you are listening to the show on the road. Welcome back, everybody. I am your audio wrangler, Zach Lupitin, and as you heard, we are talking to the amazing Devin Gilfillian, and he's down in Nashville now doing the hard work that a lot of musicians are too afraid to do in this crazy time we're living in. He is out there at the State House protesting the gun violence that has been happening all around us, including the horrifying shooting right in his backyard in Nashville. And as we'll talk about later, in the darkness of 2020, Devin did something that I don't think most artists would ever attempt. He song by song re-recorded Marvin Gaye's seminal record, What's Going On. And with his new record, I Love You Anyway, Devin is doing a very similar thing that Marvin did back in the 70s. He is both celebrating black joy and black power and black wisdom, but he is also recording on a major label contract and talking about voter repression, talking about a history of violence that runs deep in the veins of this country and is still being processed day by day. According to the USA Today, 100 days into this year, 2023, the newest attack in Louisville marks the nation's 146th mass shooting. AR-15s are bought legally to kill our kids, as you see over and over again. What are you doing to make things a little bit better? Think about it. I think Devin is doing something amazing in his music, and I can't wait for you to hear our conversation. Okay, here he is, Mr. Devin Gilfillian.
Thank you.
Everybody's looking for a new solution. You know it takes time. Every change don't have to be a revolution. But open your eyes and gonna love you anyway.
It is complicated because I think you can tell when a press release or a bio is written before Kanye has become not as into the Jews and various things. Because it's like, well, he was, you know, he grew up, you know, really idolizing the songwriting of Kanye West. And I think that's probably not something that is front and center anymore. Even though it's like, it's complicated because, like, the, you know, his work is the same. It's not like, you know, the Dropout changed because he's always crazy.
He was always trying to be the best and the biggest and the best and the biggest. And like, and there's a certain point when you get to that, like, hey, like, all right, like, you are the, you're the best at your, you know, producing and rapping, your flow, everyone's in love with it, you know, your story of coming up, and you know, there's a ceiling for that if you're not continuously humbling yourself,
right?
And Kanye lost it, and he lost his mama, and the rock that he had that kept him on the ground is now gone.
Well, the title of your new record, which as this comes out, let's just say it's in the world. Yes. Love You Anyway. I think there's a nice little double-edged sword in that title right there, right? Yeah. The sort of turn the other cheek. Love you anyway. The feeling that someone, something, maybe an entire group of people has been wronged, but we have to move past that and still bring love and bring energy that isn't just revenge. It's very of our time, I think, that phrase. You know, I feel like Lizzo has that vibe in a lot of her songs. Like, you know, I'm just going to be me. You've judged me for a long time, but I'm going to love you anyway. You know? Storms, the weather, but we're all in this ship together.
It comes from a lot of, it really truly does come from a lot of what you touched on in the sense of, you know, during the pandemic, especially, and you know, I wrote this song during the pandemic and a lot of this album, and everything was happening. George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and all of the injustice. Racial injustice that has been going on has been just, it was the blanket was pulled off and it was like, oh, we have to stare at this. We have to see this and it's, we're in it. And we can't help but be put into our echo chambers. And, and we have to realize that and realize that people are in their echo chambers. And the only way to break through that is by trying to stop yelling and making so much noise in your own echo chamber and try and listening to the other side. And when people feel like they're listened to, they try and understand you. And Love You Anyway is like kind of just the first step in that for me in trying to say, all right, I know you're fucking wrong.
Yeah.
But also everyone's lives are different and everyone is living came from a different place and an environment, and someone's life 100 miles away or even interact with them. It's hard. It's hard. It's hard.
I mean, that song Righteous that you have Nathaniel Rateliff on, right? It's like, how do we find somewhere in the middle, right?
Yeah,
a common ground that we can say, look, we're all Americans. you know, does that mean anything really? You know, I mean, this country is so diverse. People in, you know, Alabama and Mississippi have a very different view of things than me in LA, you in Nashville, right? We feel like it could be a different country, but we have to find somewhere to meet and to talk about things. Tell me about that song a little bit.
Absolutely. You know, we have to find somewhere to meet, and righteous is you know, it's a poke at religious structure that separates people and puts people into groups and makes one group of people better because they're reading the good book, and another group, the people who aren't enlightened, are lesser. And to me, there's this whole, you know, we are better than them mindset.
You can be righteous, or you can pay the bills. How do you say that you love, but you really don't know how to heal? You can be righteous, or you can be real. How do we see eye to eye when you're standing on top of your hill? Come together now.
Well, I like the balance between you can be righteous or you can be real. You can't be both, you know?
Yeah.
Because I think that the thing that it feels like we get from the left and the right is that, like, you're an idiot if you're not with me, you know? And it feels hard, I will admit, to not have that attitude, right?
It is.
It's like, what is the way to actually confront your neighbor who is believing something that is at least factually wrong, that is harming people? I mean, the whole election denial, but the vaccine, you know, misinformation, that is something that really killed millions of people, you know, and yeah. We're only going to realize the fallout of that in generations to come. And the fact that people knew that, like Fox News, like Trump, and admitted it on tape or in text messages like they're seeing in this lawsuit, and yeah. Then say, well, but the ratings say if we say the opposite, if we say the untruth, people will keep watching out of outrage. It's the profit before fact thing that is so infuriating over and over again. You know, like, how much is that stock price of Fox News worth to you? Is it really worth to sacrifice an entire generation of people who believe you? Really?
It's not. And I pray that they get held accountable. People have to diversify their news intake. That's the issue to me, is like, people don't know. They're just habitually taking in bullshit that is not accurate, and not actual journalism, and they're turning it, their entertainment, into journalism.
Right. When you take a song like Let the Water Flow, also about, you know, voter suppression and black folks in Georgia experiencing disenfranchisement for generations, I will say that a lot of folks that are in, you know, the general Americana world, which I think you are a part of, do not have the balls to really dive into a lot of this stuff. But no. I think someone like, you know, you grew up listening, like Marvin Gaye, could make you shake your ass and make you think about shit. That's something that the 60s and 70s, I think, created. And I think that folks like you are bringing back now, which I'm super happy about.
I mean, man, to me, Marvin was doing, I hope and pray that I could do what Marvin and the Staple Singers did when they were doing it, and like, the reason why is because there was that pressure, man, that there was, black people were getting fucking squeezed and jailed and beaten and had no rights, and right now we're comfortable, people are comfortable, a lot of, like, there's this fake idea that all the equity is there, and mm-hmm. We're really not, if we're not paying attention, like, the real shit is our voting rights. The real shit is getting fucking healthcare and getting our education. God, I'm going off on a tangent. I feel like I'm going off over
That's
here.
What we're here for, man.
You know?
From Savannah to Atlanta, Augusta on up to Rome, these old willows that keep weeping, if only we knew what they know. The streams turn to rivers, and rivers to seas. God help us remember that justice ain't just a dream. Let the
But I feel like, Let the Water Flow is a song that, like, again, feels like, yeah, it could have been a Staple Singer song when they're talking about, you know, going to Washington and actually speaking to power, you know. Do you feel helpless at times that music is not enough, or do you feel like this is your way to contribute?
I there is moments that I do feel like, you know, what am I doing, like, playing, strumming on a guitar and singing and instead of being out and, you know, whatever, coordinating protests or something, you know, like, but also I know that music is my superpower, and that's what I got to use. And that's why, to me, Marvin and the Staple Singers and Curtis Mayfield, like all those cats, like, that were doing it, and Kendrick Lamar now, you know, like, to me, like, there's a fearlessness that I the Americana world, I don't know, man. You listen, like you kind of said it, like there's only a few folks like TJ Osborne, the Osborne brother, you know, brothers Osborne, like they're ripping up the door, ripping down doors in the country world, that, and I'm so proud of them. And there's some artists that are trying to do, you know, bring diversity into the Americana and country world, but there are definitely, like, nobody's saying what Kendrick is saying or J. Right. Cole is saying. Like, the like hip hop to me is like, take those lyrics and like, that's the realest shit you're ever gonna see. If you hear that in the song, it's like, what? They're just, that's okay. It's funny.
What did it feel like, you know, inhabiting a song like What's Going On? Because, you know, you had that record that you basically recorded, you re-recorded his seminal record, Marvin Gaye, in 2020. Did you feel like almost the pressure to kind of match his energy, or did you try to just take it in your own direction?
I knew that I was not gonna, I was definitely trying to, like, at least match the energy, but I wasn't trying to, like, I wasn't going to be singing like Marvin, and my voice, nobody can sing like Marvin. Nobody right. can play like Jimi Hendrix. Nobody can, you know, like, I got to just do what I do.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we got to find a way to bring some loving here today.
That's why I wanted to incorporate all the different artists on that album and make it a thing. It's not, I didn't want it to be about me trying to be Marvin or trying to recreate Marvin. I wanted it to be about bringing the message that Marvin was saying then to now, and have different voices sing it and bring it. And I have a funny relationship with that song, What's Going On, because Chaka Khan and Michael McDonald were on tour opening for them, And Michael asked me to come up and sing Taking It to the Streets for the encore. And Shaka comes up for the encore. They sing What's Going On. And then they do Taking It to the Streets. And then Michael asked me to come up for What's Going On. And I didn't know. I knew I had, like, I, like, peripherally knew the song.
Yeah.
But not, like, back of my hand. Like, I knew, like, the back of my thumb, you know? And I got up. I was like, singing backgrounds. And then Shaka, third verse came around. She was like, "Wa-ching!" and threw me the mic, and I just fumbled around on that, like, just saying,
let me,
like,
get my phone out real quick for some lyrics.
Father, mother, like, sing whatever. and like, we walked off stage, and Shaka looked back to me, and she was like, "You better learn that song." But then we went out to a protest right after George Floyd was killed, and I saw people playing instruments. I was like, man, I want to bring my guitar out. And I went home, and then I, like, sat down and, like, actually learned What's Going On. And then I broke down crying. And I was like, what? How are these words already said?
Yeah.
How are these words already said?
It's like when the, you know, what is it, that concept, the space-time continuum, like, if you bend the space fabric, you're, like, right back where you were, or you're 40 years ahead. You know, it's like we're all kind of connected in this continuum. We just don't know it sometimes, you know.
Exactly that, Z. But, like, if anything, Marv, that whole record, that whole album really is a social experiment. It's a documentation of what was happening in the world in 1971, and also the cycle of how people are squeezed, and then protests breaks out, and war breaks out, and, you know, no one's giving a shit about the earth, and people are still getting squeezed, and change has to come, please. You know, like, I wasn't trying to rhyme that, like,
the show actually has to be sharp in rhyme, because, you know, then, you know, everyone can understand it. I think that the, you know, it's funny, I'm looking at this poster on my wall, the Summer of Soul with Sly and the Family Stone. My TV here in LA has some of those, like, crappy free cable channels, and one of them is, like, some vintage TV stuff that has the Ed Sullivan Show playing on loop all the time, like, from the 60s and 70s. And, like, Sly and the Family Stone were, like, on this show, and they're in this, like, looks like just, like, a basic theater somewhere, and all these white people going, like, and those guys are just ripping into these songs, like, dressed up like they're from outer space.
Oh, my, you know, God.
High heel platform boots, and the glasses and the hair, you know. But again, I think someone like Sly Stone created a sound that was accessible to a pop audience, which I think yours is too, but also is telling you something in the back of your head, you know, like telling something from the side, saying, hey, you know, we got to live together.
Man, it's that subliminal messaging.
Come on.
it's that, and, like, that's
different strokes for different folks. Come on, guys. And we sang that as kids, like, it was a kid's song.
Right? Know? Right? It's crazy. Like, that to me is the key, is like making this music, the music got tastes so good that you just swallow the lyrics, you know? It's like a
if
dog
you,
with a peanut butter pill and stuff.
If you were booked, like, on that Summer of Soul festival, I don't know if you saw that movie, but, like, you know, that lineup.
Oh, I did.
If you were booked, like, next to the Staple Singers and Sly and the Family Stone, what would you open with? Like, which song of yours?
Oh my God.
No pressure.
That, you know, I would probably, it would have to be between Let the Water Flow. If I'm in between Sly and the Staple Singers, like, I'm just thinking about that scene with Mavis singing with Mahalia Jackson, like, oh my God, how do you even...
Yeah, I started crying when I watched that part. I was like, oh God.
Goodness Lord.
She's like, what, 16 or something?
Yeah, like, how do you do that, Mavis? What?
She's still doing it.
She's still doing it, man. I got to open for her a couple times, you know, not to get off topic, and she's still giving it, and she calls me Muscles every now and then. She doesn't remember my name, but she calls me Muscles, and that makes me feel good inside, and I can die a happy man because Mavis called me Muscles. But anyway, song wise, maybe The Good Life, you know.
Right.
Maybe The Good Life. I think, like, if I'm like, to me, that feels like Summer of Soul vibes.
I remember yesterday, trouble was so far away. Making castles in the sand. Everyone a different shade, but everybody was the same. When the lion kissed the lamb.
It's about loving everybody from wherever they come from, and loving, you know, the different people, and but also just makes you feel good, and that's definitely the key, is like having songs that just make you feel fucking good and forget about the shit going on, and then songs that's like, yo, it makes you feel good, and it's like, hey, we gotta fight the power, yo.
Remember when the violence stopped and all the doors were left unlocked and the stranger was your brother? Remember when the bank got sold and everybody took their gold and everybody helped each other?
The song Brown Sugar Queen, was there a lady in mind when you were writing it? Or was it like the ideal fantasy of this queen that could one day be yours?
You know, there is actually a specific lady. And it's my girlfriend right now, actually, my partner girlfriend, my main John. No. No, her name's Megan. And yeah, we've been together for a minute, actually. Actually, you might have met her. We'd split up and got back together, and split up, grew up, and then got back together. And yeah, that song's just, it's about how I couldn't get away from her, basically.
Did that song help win her back?
A little bit. A little bit. I was like, you know, I got this song I wrote about you, you know, that is like, deposit like $2 into the ground points.
When you write a song like that and you play it for someone like her, who's probably heard you sing all sorts of love songs, right?
Oh, yeah.
Is she immediately charmed, or is she like, I've heard something like this before, bro?
I would say that it's definitely not an immediate charm. It's a It was like more of like a, like her just silently grooving and, you know, just,
all right. Okay. I like that. I like that.
Though the video, I remember seeing the video come out and it's pretty sexy. Maybe not for the kids at home.
No, definitely. It's
or maybe it is. I don't know.
PG-13, you know, we don't have any R, super R things, you know, it's TV mature. Maybe is that what they do with the music video?
Yeah. It reminds me of, there's this movie called Perfume. I think it's called Perfume, Story of a Murder or something. It's like, it's based on his true story of this guy who was a serial killer. I'm not saying that you are. Go with me on this journey for a second. He would distill the perfume of the ladies that he would kill. Like he would distill their essence.
Oh,
in like Belgium or whatever. He was completely nuts. But there's this scene in the movie that is maybe one of the most memorable scenes I've ever seen in a film. And I went to film school. I've seen a lot of films where they shot this orgy scene in like a beautiful square in France or something, with like the entire town being so enraptured by the smell of this perfume that they all make love together in this town square. And it is so beautiful and so crazy.
Wow.
And wait. I'm watching your video. I'm like, oh, wait, this reminds me of this really cool. Okay. It's not about a serial killer, but the sensualness of people embracing their bodies in an open way on camera.
If only I had like a orgy in a town square in my music video, then,
you know, when the budget goes up at the label, you know,
the budget does go up a little bit. It's kind of hard to convince 300 people to start banging.
How did you shoot that video? Like, what was the process?
You know, we got this awesome production crew that I've worked with. Frank and Chad shot this video in this studio in Nashville. And Megan, actually, she's the main one kind of in dancing in the video. And
one would hope,
you know. And they Working Holiday, that's the name of the production crew. We just wanted something celebrating Megan and celebrating Black women, you know, and having a song about that. And I'm done being, you know, tiptoeing around celebrating one person and leaving people out, and like, who cares? You know,
see, now I feel bad because I had a situation with my now wife when we first got together. I wrote this love song. It's our most played song, our Dustbowl Revival group.
Yes.
It's very, very direct. The song is just called Honey, I Love You. Okay. We did it with Keb Mo.
Yep. I've heard that. Yeah.
You know, just a very sort of sweet, soulful kind of thing. And when we did the music video, my wife, who's also an actor, was like, oh, well, you're going to like just cast me in the video, right? And we did not cast her in the video, which was not a very pleasant conversation to have. But I felt like it was like not fair. Like, it's, you know, we are a band. It's not just my project. Yeah. I felt like, well, if I make it all about her and like, have, and then it's like kind of going to be awkward. And now I'm like, you know what, dude, you should have just done it. It would have been sweet. I mean, look, Devin did it.
Devin, you make me look bad, man.
She's gonna be like, see?
you're gonna have to make it up to her. You're gonna have to have her star in a music video eventually, you know.
She did kind of star in this video I did about my daughter and her last year, but you know, it's always like a tricky thing is you want to make stuff personal, but like
you want to separate it a little bit.
Yeah, you know, like
you want your personal life to be also for you.
I also didn't want to have to like direct my own wife and be like, hey, can you maybe like show a little more leg in this shot. Like, I felt like that would have been a bit of an awkward situation.
A little more leg, babe. A little more. Come on. Shake it.
Yeah, like we shot a pool scene, you know. Now, when you're out there doing your thing, you have a song like All I Really Want to Do that is, again, in the sexy realm. Right? Aries, Pisces, Scorpio, Leo, Libra, Gemini, which is yours. You let me know. It's a very flirtatious song. Now, when you're on stage singing this, you know, obviously it can feel goofy when you're putting on a persona, but do you feel like you're sort of creating a version of yourself on stage that is a little bit different than who you really are? Or is it just like a hyper realized version of yourself?
No, I definitely feel like you have to put on like a little, like a hyper version of myself, but like a exaggerated version in a way, a sexier version and more theatrical, you know. Like I'm definitely not, I was never a theater kid or anything like that. I wish I was, but my theater teacher just wasn't cool, so didn't get into it. But like, I do like, you know, there's the performance, like, you got to get into it. You got to get into the character a little bit. And, you know, there's a little bit of that for sure. But it's all, you know, the songs are reflections of me and also reflections, you know, reflections of me off of the world and the shit that's happening in the world, too. And I think, you know, there's always going to be not fully, it's going to be myself that's in that character, but a little bit more. Which is yours, you let me know. Let's take a spin around your sign. Oh yeah, baby. Come on. I just wanna get to know you. Cause all I really wanna do.
Growing up in Philly, I know you've written that you didn't necessarily feel like you fit in any, you know, sort of one clique, you know. Did you start writing music pretty early? Did you find that as your superpower, or did that come later on?
Writing music was for sure something that came when I moved to Nashville in 2013. I wrote some instrumental stuff on guitar and had some kind of like remnants of songs that I started and didn't finish, like before I moved to Nashville, like when I was in college and just playing acoustic sets out and playing covers and stuff. But I didn't find my voice as a writer really until I moved to Nashville and like started going to writer rounds. And
what was the first record that you remember being moved by as a kid or sort of saying like, this is important, something your folks gave you or were playing at home?
I would say probably Bob Marley, Waiting in Vain. Like that. Yeah. And like my dad was always playing Stevie Wonder, like in the house. Inner Visions and Songs in the Key of Life was always playing. Like he was Stevie Wonder was like his North Star, and so that was always rocking. But Bob Marley, yeah, that album Waiting in Vain, I remember like getting like the Legends CD and putting it in my Walkman and like putting in my headphones and thinking about this girl I had a crush on in fourth grade and just weeping one single tear.
No, I read this. I read this study, completely apropos of nothing, that is fascinating. That our tears, when we're sad, are actually filled with more protein, so they roll down our face slower, so people can see how upset we are, and then comfort and help us and save us from dying.
Wow. Look, humans are crazy.
Well, I finally actually listened to some of your debut EP from 2016. Oh, yeah, Throw It Back.
Throwback. That's a throwback right there.
Here and Now. Here and Now is a hot song, man.
I thank you. Thank you, Z. I appreciate that. And it's so funny, like, how my song, my sound has evolved since then. And I love that EP, and the, it's like very blues, a lot, very much more blues and like old school R&B, Al Green vibes, you know, and Staple Singer vibes, and that like is a part of me, but also, you know, then I'm gonna throw some Thundercat in there, some, you know, I wanna get weird, I wanna get push it forward, my dream is to take the Americana audience, you know, that I started off with that album, with that EP, mm-hmm. and make them realize that they love me. They love the blues. They love R&B from back in the day.
Right.
But what Kendrick is doing right now is the fucking blues that's happening right now. That shit's more real than anything.
Mm-hmm.
And if you like, if you want to romanticize, you know, the blues from back in the day, then you need to listen to what's happening right now. Come back to the here and now. It's a swooping basis of this love of ours. Oh, I know you don't need. And like, how do you bridge those audiences from hip hop to Americana? How do you do that? You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Festivals, maybe some, you know, Billings, whatever. No.
Like what was the weirdest combo playing before or after you?
You know, we were in Sweden and we opened up at this random town for this like reggae band, this like Swedish white reggae band.
Oh boy.
And I was like, oh shit, what are we getting into? And they were popping. They did it. Like, they were like, and they were, I was like, oh man, what are they gonna do? And they were giving me some Roots fucking Toots and the Maytals shit. Like, I was like,
yeah,
oh, all right, y'all, all right. And it, so I was like, at first I was like, this is going to be weird and so not it, but yeah.
Your debut full length was a Black Hole Rainbow, which I think definitely set you in the path to being known, at least on a national scale. You know, you're mixing a lot of, you know, different genres together there, which is cool. But, you know, you start off with that Unchained track, which is really emotional. You know, tell me a little bit about your brother Ryan and how that song came to be.
Absolutely. So my brother, he's a year younger than me, and he's definitely like the gangster version of myself. You know, I'm like the soft golden child, and he was like the one who didn't give a fuck. And
yeah,
you know, he's not scared to tell you what's on his mind. And but this song Unchained, like, it's funny, I wrote this song at first, it was just a movie prompt. It was like, we were, me and Andrew Petroff and my buddy Tim Bruns were writing it for this movie, and it was about this black guy got arrested and accused of rape, but he didn't do it and all this stuff, blah, blah, blah. And I wrote the song, and after I wrote it, it's weird. Like, sometimes I write songs that, and like, in the moment they happen so fast that I'm writing it for something else, and then it, and then I realize it's actually about my brother. And all the obstacles that he's been put in front of, and he was in an accident back in 2008 that left him paralyzed from the waist down, and it's, you know, I can't imagine going through just not only the physical pain but the mental pain of that and all of it, but he worked through it and got, he's making music now and doing his thing, and so yeah, that song became an anthem for him and kind of about how proud I am of him and what he's gone through.
And I'm standing there no matter what comes at me, I'm gonna break these chains. I will remain unchained and my heart is free. I'm still the man I was born to be. Oh, nothing's ever gonna hold me.
Yeah, it's, you know, always another balance of how much to reveal about certain tragedies or hardships that we go through. And, you know, it's like, is this your story to tell? Is this his story to tell? And, you know, I think that, you know, it's more like where our heart is in the situation, you know, and what was his feeling when that song came out? Like, what did he say?
He was definitely like grateful and he almost didn't believe me at first, and then I was like, actually, like, I would love for you to star in the music video and everything, and then he was really grateful for it, you know. He was just like, me and my brother have always been so opposite, and we've fought our whole lives and been you know. So I feel like it was a moment of showing him how much I really do love him and care about him.
Was there a moment where you played on some insane festival bill or you know, the Ryman or something, where your folks were like, I can't believe I have a rock star that I created? Like, what was the rock star moment of moments for you?
I feel like the rock star moment, one of them was, we got to open for the Fray in 2017.
Okay.
At Red Rocks, and flew my mom out, and my brother and my mom came out. And I feel like that was like a moment where she was like, all right, he's doing this damn thing.
The Fray, they're a legit band.
I've heard of them. It's funny how, like, you certain, you know, you could be opening for Bad Bunny and like your parents would be like, what's a Bad Bunny? Why are you opening up for a Bad Bunny?
Is this a petting zoo show?
yeah. It's you gotta, they have to know and be familiar with it to like, oh, okay, I see. Yeah, he's doing it.
Was there a show maybe early on where you really questioned whether or not this would be a legit path for you? Like, it was so bad that you're like, I really should just maybe get my master's degree in psychology and have my own practice.
You know, I mean, there's definitely been shows that like Oxford, Mississippi. Like we're like we were playing to like two people and the staff in
at Proud Larry's. I think I played that same show with you.
Proud.
About 10 people. It was pouring rain. No one showed up. Yeah, I remember that.
Straight up, Proud Larry's. But then, like, you know, those shows don't bother me as much because I feel like I did enough of those shows in college where I was just playing to either nobody or playing to people who were not listening and drinking and yelling stupid covers at me. And, you know, like, and there was enough happening between those shitty shows of good things that I like held on to very firmly. I was like, all right, there's two people here tonight. This is going to be what it is. But like tomorrow's going to be a good show. Like tomorrow we're going to be opening up for this person. And yeah.
Do you give yourself a pep talk sometimes before you go on stage? Like, what is your pre-stage ritual?
My pre-stage ritual usually is like pee three times for no reason.
Okay.
Chug all the water and then pee again.
Okay. Hydration. Extreme hydration.
Extreme hydration. I don't know what, like, my body's like, you got to pee now. And it's like, ah.
Yeah.
And pretty much just like kind of like hold on to a moment of gratitude right before we get on stage. Just
that's
like
smart.
Look at each other and be like, we get to get on stage and play music tonight for a living. Like let's have fun. Let's enjoy it. And that's it.
If you were to create a festival though, anywhere in the world, it can be anywhere. You could book five artists, dead or alive, special fantasy festival. Who would they be and where would it be placed?
Okay. I want to say Jamaica is where I would go.
Okay.
I've actually never been to Jamaica, I have family in Jamaica. I've never been. I just want to go there. That's just like a spot I've never.
Fire festival, except it actually works this time.
Except it works. As far okay, so Jamaica's. I'm a stick to Jamaica.
Okay.
Stick to Jamaica. As far, I mean, God, Marvin Gaye. Like I gotta have Marvin and Steve and Jimi Hendrix.
Okay.
Like those are my top two right there. Kendrick. No, actually, sorry, I take that away. I would have. Then Biggie and Tupac, and then Aretha Franklin. Yeah, those would be my five. I feel like that in Jamaica, you know, like Biggie, yeah. Little Biggie versus Tupac on stage. That'd be some fire.
To make things even more complicated, you get to cook one dish for all these people backstage. You'd be like, all right, Aretha, please enjoy my signature dish, which is?
I'm going to say kimchi fried rice.
Ooh. All right.
Oh, yeah. I make a mean kimchi fried rice.
All right. Let's take it out with the title track, Love You Anyway, because I feel like the energy on there sharing joy through the darkness, through the hardships that we've gone through, like, what is the thing that inspired that song?
The thing that inspired that song was, you know, really, it was my personal relationship. It was my, you know, like my Nana. She didn't vote, you know, she voted for Trump the first time around. And I, as much as I'm as angry as I am about that, you know, she's, I can't hate her for that. Mm-hmm. I have to, like, I gotta, she's got who knows how long,
right,
on this earth left. And yeah, like, am I gonna ask her, say, hey, like, I'll take your ballot to the thing and then throw it in the trash? Yeah, I would do that. But I also no, I wouldn't do that. I would respect her, but I have to love her. I have to love her, even though I'm mad at her politics and mm-hmm. and that, and then get to the conversation of, all right, this is why I'm fucked. Like, this is why all this affects me and blah, blah, blah. And who knows if she's going to get it? Who knows? She's 92 years old.
Mm.
You know, like, at this point.
Well, it's so complicated, I think, when you're a Black man in America, right? And your own family is, you know, sort of putting their finger on the scale saying, actually, we support someone who's openly a white supremacist, right?
Yeah.
Now they probably will say, like, well, but it's just about taxes or blah, blah, blah. And that's the thing that's hardest to talk about. But for you, it's like a double complication, you know?
Well, my Nana is white.
Right.
And, but also, and, you know, and like, it's just, it's complicated in a way of like, I don't think I'm ever going to change my Nana's mind.
No.
And that's okay. It's just gotta be okay.
It's hard to do that.
When the time is right, you know, when to like get into it, to fight the power, like we have to fight the power for 100%. But also we have to recognize the moments where we can't turn each other into enemies, or else the power, we're not going to be able to fight the power.
Yeah.
Because the powers are really the fucking, the things that are separating us.
I got the power.
I got the power.
Well, thank you for getting on with me, man. Love the new record. And I think the universe will be better off because of it.
Z, thank you. Thank you for having me, man. And I appreciate you listening to the album and just so detailedly and all the beautiful questions, bro. Thank you.
Thank you, man. Well, you know, we have some Korean barbecue waiting for you here in LA whenever you're here.
I will listen.
Hit me up.
And I'll let you know when I'm in the hood. That,
yeah, man.
Love that. Love to kick it, meet some Korean barbecue with you.
Love you anyway.
Big thanks to Devin for getting on the line with me. His newest record is called Love You Anyway. Turn it up loud, turn it up proud. You can get it at devingilfillian.com. And he is going on tour where you can hear him in person. Yes, live music. I recommend it. April, he's playing in Philadelphia, his hometown, in New York, in Carrboro, North Carolina, in Spartanburg, South Carolina, and Savannah, Georgia, Nashville, and more. Please check it out. Really important stuff that he's putting out. If you're curious what my band Dust Bowl Revival is doing, well, let me tell you this. We are coming up to the Pacific Northwest this Friday at Doug Fir in Portland, Saturday, Nectar Lounge in Seattle, and going down to Bend, Oregon at Volcanic Theater Pub on Sunday. And then next week, we'll be playing in Berkeley, in Sacramento, in Santa Cruz, in the big show April 22nd at the Troubadour in LA. Did you know that you can donate to this podcast if you like it? I think you like it if you've listened this far. You can go to the text notes in the Apple page, red circle, click on it, and you can send us $1 million. As always, the show on the road is written, produced, and edited by yours truly, Zach Lupitin, and we are part of the BGS Podcast Network. Stay safe, stay creative, and we'll see you on the trail.
Love you anyway.
Hey, this is Steve Choi, host of the Musicians Guild podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. Within the four walls of the Musicians Guild, we'll be discussing the habits, idiosyncrasies, experiences, and general psychology of my friends and peers all involved with music in various capacities. Listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.